You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Towinski and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax, the spookiest web development show in the world. With me, as always, is Spooky Delinsky.
It's Spooky Delinsky here with Wes Booth.
So today we've got our horror web dev stories for you, which is pretty exciting. We do this every Halloween. It's become a yearly thing where we ask the audience to submit their most stick your head in the sand, oof, horror stories of things that went wrong as a developer, whether it's deleting an entire database or shipping a swear word or all kinds of hilarious stories. So I think this is the third year that we've done it now, and the stories are awful, but usually they are in the past, so we can laugh about them now.
They're tremendous. And I almost feel like you could have a whole podcast that's just web dev oopsies. It's like, yeah, Here's a story about some web dev oopsies and we'll talk about it. So these are always a blast. I'm super psyched.
We are sponsored by three spooky companies today. First one is LogRocket JavaScript Session Replay. So if you have ghosts in your application, they will track them down. And the next one is Mux. They do video hosting and transcoding for your application. So if you have a spooky video, they could transcode it.
Okay, we got to do something different than spooky for the third one. What do you got?
Third one is Linode. They are the spookiest spookiest cloud computing and Linux servers that is out there. If you've got some gremlins in your server and it's going down, you know who you should be trusting. It's Linode. How's that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, there's no sure. Bats in their bell tower. That's for sure, gang. Yeah, I don't really know. So, Wes, I think we are ready to kick it off with some
spooky stories.
Whoa! How did you do that?
How did I do what?
Oh my gosh. He didn't even tell me he was doing this. This is amazing.
You would actually not believe how much time I had to put in just for that one little
spooky story.
Get in here and actually sound decent. It's been a voyage, Wes.
That was well worth it. You'll have to read out the titles in that.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't crash my computer, I'm very good. So I will get started with this first one that I found on Twitter. I thought this was very funny. It says, "Hey guys, love the show. I wanted to share with you something that happened just the other day. It was October 4th. I was starting my new job at a large tech company. They use React for everything, even DNS. Don't ask me how, it's complicated. I figured I'd celebrate my first day and push some code to prod. How hard could a use effect be, right? Next thing you know, I end up bringing down the entire company, all of their servers, and they ended up bringing in a guy with an angle grinder to access the server cage." Wait a second, Wes.
Wait a second.
What's going on here? This is fake. Obviously, this is fake. Sorry, I started off with a fake one.
The rest are real.
Yeah, the rest are real, I promise. For those of you who don't know, they actually needed to use an angle grinder to get into to access the physical servers for the Facebook outage. Yeah, yeah. So that's what this joke is about. Basically, the Facebook, they had like goofed up something in their DNS settings. Not just like, oopsies, we added a period here in the DNS. No, they were like doing some crazy self-managed DNS stuff, and it like pulled all their records from the web, and then
they like locked themselves out.
Yeah, so they brought an angle grinder and tore down the door.
Oh, wow. That's insane. I have a bit of a spooky story myself that I figure I'd start the thing off with. Is this is about maybe about a year ago that this happened, and listener of the show, Tim, a Denver coder on Twitter, he messaged me one day and he was like, "Hey, I'm trying to buy your course and it's just not working. Like, it's like not giving me an error message or anything." And I was like, "That's super weird. Like, what could possibly be going on?" And luckily he was nice enough to like give me all this information. And I was like sitting there being like, "What is going on? Like, I'm selling all kinds of other courses. Everything is working fine. Like, zero things are showing up in my error tracking." And I was like, what is going on here? And then finally, I was just like going, as I was reading like the code base line by line, just trying to figure out what could be possibly happening. And then I realized it came to me. So probably about a year and a half or like 6 months before this, I was getting slammed by some spammer was trying to just slam my thing with a bunch of fake credit cards, and they were Stripe was handling it and whatnot. But I just wanted to like stop this from happening. So I very quickly just jumped in. And I wrote like a block. I said, any email address that has Denver in it, just reject it, right? And because the spammer was specifically using like an email address with Denver in it. And it was just enough to just stop this guy from hammering the system, right? I just threw a little if statement in there and returned if it had the email Denver in there and went along with my life.
Oopsie doops, yep.
So the bug was literally nobody with the Denver in their email address, according to a regex, could buy any of my courses. And it had like never popped up. Like, who's got Denver in their email address?
That can't be like that common. I mean, as somebody who lives in Denver, it's not like we all got that email address or something. That is very funny. I actually want to see if I can see how many people in Level Up Tutorials database have the email Denver in their email address. None. There's not a single one. There's not a single one.
I'm curious about that too. Well, let me look up mine. 63.
What?
Yeah.
Where are my people at? My people got to come to Level Up Tutorials here.
It'll probably be about 20% of them are from a university in Denver.
Oh, okay.
But surprisingly, a lot of people have Denver in their email address. So that was definitely an issue.
That's super funny. Here's another real world one, not one that was sent to us, though. I figured this one would be good to share because it turns out like the week we decided we were going to start pulling stories for this episode, there was a ton of like high profile dev oopsies. Here's another dev oopsie horror story here that I thought was even just reading the headline might get you shaken in your boots. DeFi bug accidentally gives $90 million to its users. Founder begs them to return it. So this crypto protocol, or I don't know, honestly, I don't know the language enough to speak on this, but basically they gave $90 million to their users because they goofed up. And then the guy went on Twitter and like, really, I think begging is charitable. He threatened them. He was saying he was going to send the IRS after them and all sorts of stuff. It's like, dude, I know it's $90 million. You made that oopsie. You gave the money away. I don't think threatening them is going to give the money back. So that's a big time oopsie. I think $90 million, there's very few developers who are going to hit a $90 million oopsie in their career.
Oh, so the guy who tweeted it out says, if you received a large incorrect amount from a protocol error, please return it. Keep 10% as white hat. Otherwise, you're being report as income to the IRS and most of you doxed. Well, if you report it as income to the IRS, you get to keep 50%.
Also, you have to pay taxes on the IRS for that regardless. You'll have to pay it for the 10%, even if you gain whatever you gain, you're going to have to pay taxes on it. So like, yeah.
Yikes. That's a bad day.
That's a bad day.
Oh, man. All right. This one. And by the way, we're keeping everybody anonymous in this one just to protect the innocent. Most people ask to be named anonymous, but literally everybody is anonymous. So we don't get any people asking us to claw back their story. So the story goes, hi, this is my contribution to these stories. I was a developer at a consulting firm in Sweden writing C# on the back end and using React with either JavaScript or TypeScript and hosting everything in Azure on the 99% of the time and 1% in SharePoint. It was my last week of my job before I was due to start a new job. I worked 12 hours a day to keep up with all the handovers to colleagues so they would have a chance to continue working on all the solutions I had taken care of. The project was a process tool hosted on SharePoint Online. The guy who would oversee it had -1% experience with SharePoint, to which I pointed out to my bosses. But to make things a bit easier, I wrote a deploy script to ease things out a bit. Starts in the terminal and runs a script towards the acceptance environment. Umpteen million errors appear, which is strange because there should be only about 20 commands which can cause errors like these. I log into the environment to double check. Now I accidentally entered the wrong values in the script, which looked okay according to me, but I got a 404 error when I was trying to reach the environment. I log into the admin interface. I discover the site is gone. And checking the trash can, there are no things there. Oh, very strange.
Very curious.
I find that I'm in a different folder than was the one where I saved my script. In that folder, there was an old deploy script that was used when the project was started thousands of years ago. The first thing the script does is force delete the site and then to create a new empty site. The site is gone with lists and everything. Lists and SharePoint are sort of like SQLite. So the database is gone essentially here. There are no backends of the acceptance environment, although it is very important. I feel just a little bit panic of how I'm going to solve this. However, I remember a testing tool 6 months ago to copy the entire environments, which an attempt was made to the acceptance environment. Finds the clone environment, and we can use the same tool to clone it back. It only took 8 to 12 hours of work to recreate the new things in the environment in the last 6 months instead of X number of hours to build everything from scratch.
Oh, my.
Ooh.
So, the lesson here, backups. Frequent backups if you have things like this. Dang, yeah, frequent backups for stuff like this. It seems like they got lucky with a backup, not even like one that was prepared to be there.
Oh, a little bit of bonus here. Once I updated a feature that saves accessories on order, same solution. However, I failed to add all the new fields to the production environment, which meant that accessories were not saved at all, which was discovered after a week. I fixed the error in 5 minutes and the sellers had to contact X number of customers to double check what kind of accessories they would want on all their orders. Oh,
couple of doozies.
Confirm. Yeah, yikes.
Yep.
Good story, though.
Couple of doozies here. Next one we have here is called
External HD.
Okay. One time I needed to format a server. It was an outdated Windows server I selected and copied and pasted to an external hard drive. My drive was pretty fast and it looked like a minute. And I was like, wow, this is a great external HD. Formatted the server. And as soon as I realized it didn't copy 10% of the files, I had that face. We all know the face. Yes, we absolutely do. Anyways, I tried to restore the files using some HD recovery tools, but they were all corrupted, not by the formatting itself, but by the installation of the new OS. My boss was pissed. I was very young, so I had to blame it on the server. I'm not proud of it. What'd the server do? The server just got corrupted. But why the heck would they ask a developer to format a server in the first place? By the way, my birthday is on Halloween. John finishes.
Spooky.
So, yeah, that one's pretty bad. You know, I'm so very paranoid about that. Whenever I'm formatting a hard drive,
yeah.
You know, when they say like, you know, the measure twice, cut once thing, I'm measuring like 18 times. If I have moved over precious files or backed up something, it's like I need to confirm that those things are where they are. I'm from the days of a LaCie 200 gigabit drive storing your entire life on it, and that drive just waking up one day and saying, not today. No thanks today. Yeah. I'm done. So yeah, I got to have those backups.
Yeah, always have two backups of everything and confirm that they are working periodically. That's just an awful thing to happen.
Yeah.
Next one we have here is called Hey Loser. You want to say it in your spooky voice?
Hey Loser.
I was testing some new code to automate mass mailing to our customers. Ooh, these ones always start so good.
Whenever it includes the word mass in it, it's a...
Yeah, whenever it includes the word mass, it's like, yep. Oh man, who knows what demon drove me, but I wrote the test mailings like ransom notes. Dear loser, fork over your dollars or else. Well, all was looking great and I was feeling pretty pleased with myself. Progress bars were sliding and counters were spinning, but I could hear the rising commotion from the marketing guys behind me. Phones were ringing, voices were raised. Turns out I had moronically wired myself to the production database. Even worse for me, I'd only been with the company a month or two.
No!
I thought my goose was cooked and the big boss was plenty mad, but I owned up right away and apologized. We put out the cover story that we'd been hacked and all was forgiven. Love your show. What?
Whoa.
Is saying you got hacked better than saying we accidentally sent these mailings out that were a test?
At least blame it on the intern. That's what HBO did.
Yeah, no kidding.
HBO's like, I mean, so this, we got this person just pushed the button. I'm so sorry. We can't do anything about it.
Oh, man. Yeah. Never put anything, swear words or silly things into tests always just write test, test, test.
Yeah, even lorem ipsum, better than that.
Yeah, I would probably just put test, 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 this is a test.
Yeah.
Because like many times I get little push notifications on my phone that say, this is a test. I'm like, oh, some developer somewhere just goofed up, but at least I don't have to look into it. You know, like lorem ipsum, especially if you have just like regular users, they're going to be like, what is this?
Oh yeah, they're going to think it was hacked. And then maybe if the hack is going to be your excuse, then maybe that's the answer. All right, next question here, or next question, next horror story. Let's see, we got to come up with a good title for this one.
Extreme Developer Fumble.
Horror story. I was part of the developer team that accidentally leaked the 8 cities in the XFL, an alternate football league. And for those of you who are not Americans, they're talking about American football here. The XFL was the wrestling XFL one where they hit people hard and they had some fancy new rules. Either way, a week before their press conference, that's when all 8 cities were leaked. We were using Contentful and Gatsby. A junior dev entered the information into the prod space of the UAT space. And when we released some bug fixes, it picked up the content update. So as you can imagine, there's new data available. And so the Gatsby site was rebuilt with that new data. That new data then went live. I found out after seeing the stories pop up in Google News when I was about to go to sleep, was taking the content down and started getting calls from the CEO or CIO of the WWE. OP is about to get his head in a choke slam here. The league went bust because of COVID. Yes. If this is used, please don't use my Twitter name. You can be safe. He hate me. We did not expose you on here. And I am so sorry that you accidentally were a part of the team that leaked the 8 cities. That's actually a pretty major leak if you think about it. I'm sure you could find the news stories about that when that was leaked. Chances are if you did something where there like becomes a news story about whatever you did, that's a pretty big oopsie.
He linked us to a ewrestling.com article where all of the names of the things had leaked and like, oh, imagine like a little Gatsby error and like the entire league names are leaked out. That's kind of interesting that like a lot of us developers have access to information that is confidential and sometimes probably even like I wonder a lot of developers have to go through like trading stocks and things like that. You have information to, it's kind of crazy.
When I worked at Ford, I had signed mountains of documents about unreleased vehicles or all sorts of stuff.
Oh yeah.
Or like when we were doing demos that people were going to be seeing, we had to make sure that we were using like specific models. I told you about that one time we were doing a Q&A and that guy was like super upset that the Ford Mustang like wasn't in the thing. And we're like, listen, man, we've been given very specific assets. I'm sorry that the site does not have a Ford Mustang for you on it. For those of you who have never heard that story, we were doing like a Q&A with like real people. And this guy was like so hung up. He's like, I hate this design. This design is terrible. And we're just like, why? There's no Mustang. Got to have the Mustang. We're just like, oh. So if you are the type of person who has made a spooky mistake in your code, everything's just going to be spooky from now on, Wes. It's just spooky.
Spooky.
If you've made a spooky mistake in your code and you don't know why, but you get reports of users seeing some unusual behavior in your application, you might be concerned. You might be hiring a ghost hunter, but we will hire LogRocket because it allows you to see what's going on in your site. And that's like an error and exception handling service that gives you an actual visual replay. Imagine if someone was stealing your cookies and you could go in there and you fire up your video camera and you say, oh, that's not a ghost. I thought that was a ghost stealing my cookies. It's not a ghost. It's actually my 4-year-old child opening the thing. And you could see your 4-year-old child sneaking in those cookies with LogRocket. LogRocket, again, is a service to monitor errors and exceptions on your site. So if a user is causing some issues, they're stealing your cookies, you're going to get a video of that. You're going to be able to see how they did it, when they did it, where they did it, all that error log, network requests, all that and more. Check it out, logrocket.com/syntax. Sign up and you'll get 14 days for free. And thank you so much for LogRocket for sponsoring this very spooky episode. This is actually, honestly, as for a sponsorship read, this is like a dream episode for LogRocket because you could have gone anywhere with it. You could have said, what's the Wolfman doing? Is the Wolfman, is he destroying your header? Is Dracula causing errors in your console? Who knows? I could just keep going. Yeah.
It's a good episode for LogRocket to sponsor. So I'm sure they'll be happy with that. Next one we have here is called I Don't Have Memory of This. I had two pretty bad code changes that only showed their problems when they went live into production. The worst kind of bugs are bugs that show up when they only hit production, especially ones that are like take the entire site down. Around 6 years ago, I was running into a large performance issue with some of our queries running slowly against our DB. We were using JPA/Hibernate and had a bunch of joins that were done lazily. I switched them to eager so they would create a single SQL statement instead of a bunch or thousands. The change worked fine in my dev environment, QA, and staging. Staging was supposed to be representative of production. So we went live within a few minutes, our entire system went down and was out of memory. We quickly switched back to lazy joins. We found out that staging had more memory and fewer DB records than production, and they were supposed to be exactly the same. Ooh, isn't that funny? Like, you run all these tests, you think about everything, but if the environment is not to a T exactly, both in terms of specs of the server and specs of how many pieces of databases you have or how many items in your database you have, things can go south.
You know, there's just about nothing in the entire world that scares me more than modifying a production database.
Yeah.
Like, I take backups. I do everything you could possibly do to be secure about it, do dry runs and all that stuff. And we did some database migrations recently, and I was just like, dear gosh, please work no matter what. Even though I knew it was going to work, it's still like, just hold on to your butts. Next story here is called
Your Performance is Slowing Us Down. No.
Okay. Back when VMware was becoming a thing, like 2010 or so, I was working at an e-com site and we were seeing slow performance between the app server and some data services. I decided to build a little multi-headed logger that could track when a query to Oracle Financials was running too slow and generate a warning.
Multi-threaded, multi-headed sounds spooky.
Oh, yeah. You know that multi-threaded is a tough word. There's two T's in there, and they're very quite close succession. Multi-threaded logger that could track when a query to Oracle Financials was running too slow and generate a warning. Oracle Financials was doing the credit card transaction orders and the rest of the site's DB work. The code had no impact on my dev, QA, and staging environments. We were hitting well over our minimum number of concurrent users. We deployed it to production, and then the system got slower and slower, but never crashed. Again, production and staging were set up differently. Staging was a bare metal server. Production was running on an ESXi server on a host that was split four ways. The multi-threaded code was meant to detect performance degradations, was slowing the whole system down when it tried to synchronize the data across threads. I was pretty embarrassed by these two issues. It went to show that production is its own special thing and that you really don't know when your server-side code is going to work until it starts running there. One, I'm so glad I never have to worry about multi-threaded anything in my day-to-day job. If I had to worry about that, that would probably be not a good situation for the company I was working on. It seems like there's like a lot of attention to detail when dealing with performance of that kind of nature. But this sounds intense. I don't fault anybody for goofing up something like this and just seeing that performance degradation. At least you caught it before you sent out an email to 20,000 users or something, or leaked something to the WWE's news press kit. So I don't think this one's not too bad.
All right, next one we have here is from my dad, actually. My dad's worked in tech for Bert? Many, many years. Bert? No, not Bert. Not the creator of CSS. This one is called Dead Button. Way back when mainframes were king, a guy I work with pushed a button in that, if released, would immediately take down the entire company. He stood there for 4 hours.
What?
He stood there for 4 hours holding the button in until we could let it crash after business hours. We gave him a chair after 2 hours. Oh, that sucks. I remember doing this exact same thing, not taking an entire business down, but when I was in grade 3, remember Windows 95 would have that black and orange screen that was said is now safe to turn off your computer.
Yeah.
I remember the teacher's like, all right, shut down the computers, because that's what you did when you were done with the computers. You turned it off. So I just pushed the button in and I immediately recognized, oh, shoot, it's not safe to turn off your computer that way. Right? So I pushed the button in. And then I start like looking around and being like, oh man, like who here is smart enough to know how to shut down a computer, right? Because like I was the tech kid, because I couldn't do it with my left hand. So I called over a buddy of mine. He shut down the thing, and like Windows 95 took like 3 minutes to shut down. So I was sitting there holding the button in until we finally got to that black and orange screen that said is now safe to shut down your computer. Gosh. And then I let it go, the button.
That's so funny. I don't honestly even know what it's doing in that shutdown process. I've never like taken the time to learn about what that actually was about. What's the deal with that shutdown screen?
That's a really good question. Probably something with the hard drive.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with like safely ejecting your SD card or whatever. I don't do that. No one's got time for that.
No one's got time for that. Yank it. Okay. So I got to do the spooky voice.
No deploys on Fridays.
Okay. I was a junior dev working on our company's website. They were HTML plus nunchucks templates. I'd never used nunchucks, Wes. Did you?
No. I was... It was more popular in, I think, the Ruby on Rails world.
Okay. HTML and nunchucks templates that were later integrated with the backend using some Python witchcraft. Oh, we got snakes and witchcraft. There was also a metric boop ton of JS libraries added, like Babra or page transitions, 3JS for cool interactive animations on the landing page. Didn't really get much of all this package.json stuff at that seniority level. So after running Yarn or NPM or whatever, and seeing a bunch of warnings, I think that's typical, by the way, seeing a bunch of warnings about a couple packages being outdated, I decided to update some of them. It ran great locally, but I didn't build the prod version as I didn't know there could be any differences. I was working on some minor feature, and the PM decided that there was no time for a code review. So I pushed the repo. The backend guy did his integration and it launched on prod. As it turned out, there were some breaking changes in one of the libraries that decided to update and crash the entire site on Friday at 4:30. And that, kids, is why you don't deploy on Friday. Yeah, you think? You know what? I actually don't mind deploying on Friday personally, as long as the test pass. I've manually tested immediately afterwards, and everything is like, this is a small update, but to push some code to production that you did not test after updating dependencies, that's on you. That's not on Friday. Don't blame Friday for you.
Yeah, risky. I definitely would not do that myself on a Friday, no matter how much I tested. It's just a recipe for disaster. Hopefully they had like some like lock files of the previous dependencies and were able to roll it back or fix the thing pretty quickly. But
yeah, I love the modern hosts now just have like the rollback button. It's like redeploy this deploy, please. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Honestly, like that's sort of the way to do it is you deploy the thing on another server and make sure it's all running fine. And then when it is, you cut over to the new one and instead of having to like break the entire thing. Next one we have here is stupid selfie horror story for you, Wes. I work one of the biggest retailers in the UK, and we were working on an app that would go on a media wall in their flagship store in London.
Cool.
Basically a giant 200-inch screen in the middle of a store that would show social content can go onto. I actually built a couple of those for forget what it was, but it was on like part of like a Christmas thing, and they would show tweets where you could hashtag it. And I remember having to like filter them for swear words and everything.
Right on.
Turns out I left my local dev version connected to the production API when I uploaded a couple of my stupid selfies of my big head in the office. I get a call the next day to ask why my face is all over the media wall. Oh, that sucks. That is funny.
That's very funny. Can you imagine
just like walking into this like high-end store in London and there's just pictures of some guy
goofy developer
with a Coke can beside him.
Yeah, that is very funny. All right, this next one is called
Soda.
I was a computer operator back in the late 1960s operating a Honeywell mainframe. The consoles were huge and about the size of a dishwashing machine. Also known as a dishwasher, with the console typewriter and printer inset in the middle on top. I had a soft drink on the console next to the typewriter mechanism. We were told never to bring drink into the room, but we all did it. You can see where this is going, especially on the third shift. Long story short, someone called my name. I turned around and knocked the glass of soda onto the console. It had to be completely replaced. The machine was down for 2 days and my boss was not happy. Well, do you think you're... Yeah, that's a rough one. Spilling anything, not so good. Yep. No, thank you.
Can you imagine, like, every time I knock something over, I specifically have my laptop up on a little stand just so that it...
Yeah.
Your keyboard, if it gets a coffee on it, you might lose it. That's okay. But, like, your laptop, too scary. And, like, imagine a mainframe running an entire business. I would just go stick my head in the sand.
I would stick my head in quicksand or, yeah, yes, absolutely something. Speaking of mainframes... speaking of mainframes, do you want to host your website in a place where you don't have to worry about accidentally spilling a Coke on your mainframe to bring it down? You might want to check out one of our sponsors, which is Linode, which has been a cloud hosting service that's been around for a long time and does the job way good. Wes, do you want to talk about Linode?
I do want to talk about Linode. Linode is a cloud hosting company for your applications, and they have all kinds of different services. They're probably most popular for their Linux boxes that you can host a Node app or Ruby on Rails app or whatever on. But I'm going to talk about something else they do today is they have dedicated compute for CPU intensive workloads. So if you need a mainframe to maybe do a whole bunch of CPU intensive workloads, whether that's like resizing data or going over a billion records and updating those records or parsing out music or anything that is CPU intensive, and you need to do a whole bunch of that work at once, they have dedicated processors on there. So you're not sharing it with anybody. You can use the whole Go yourself. Check it out at linode.com/syntax. And that's going to get you $100 in free credit, which is pretty sweet. You could use that for some dedicated CPU intensive workloads or just hosting your own website. Thank you, Linode, for sponsoring.
Yeah. You can also use it to buy Coke with some of that money you saved. Okay. Oof. A big horror story. I had my own software companies in the 90s, and it was in Singapore, customizing my software package for Johnson and Higgins insurance brokers. I had their Asian contract for my insurance broker accounting package. I spent a good 40 hours on Saturday and Sunday making all the changes that were asked for, getting ready for a demo on Monday morning. I finished up about 4 a.m. on Monday morning and was cleaning out my files. All this work was being done on a Novell server. Print files had an extension of PRT, and I had a ton of them in the main directory from all the testing I had done. I was getting to cleaning out old files, getting ready to break everything up, and then I thought I would delete all of the print files. I mistakenly key erased *.prg instead of .prt. Whatever the delete command was, I don't remember. Now, programming files have a .prg extension. I deleted all of my updated files from the weekend. In desperation, I called Novell in Utah, hoping that they could recover the files, but it was no go, and the demo Monday morning was not fun. Failed demos, never any good. I've been in a room with a failed demo where the dev was just sitting there sweating the whole time. And it was not a lot of fun to be in. And I wasn't even the person who worked on it. So yeah, no thanks for that one.
Oh man, like this is why you should use that trash command.
Yes, yeah, trash.
No matter what, one little, it's hitting a G instead of a T, just erase 40 hours. Yep. And a bad demo. Yikes, yikes, yikes.
Remember my horror story, which is running git clean on the root directory of a machine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, these all remind me of that. No, thank you.
I'm stressed out just reading these stories.
I know. I have a certain degree of tension in my body after this episode.
Next one we have here is called a young dev. I was a young dev right out of college. My first job was at a child support company where we had desktop apps that would handle all the information more efficiently than using Excel. My first project was to write a proof of concept that would later be implemented into a new, bigger app that consolidated all of the proof of concept for various parts of the child support process. For some odd reason, I still don't know why to this day, my boss wanted to write me to me to write this new app on top of an older app with a bunch of legacy code. I never understood why, but as a young dev fresh out of school, you tend to just do what you're told. In school, I mainly use PHP, HTML, and CSS for learning how to work with the database, but this job was C# and .NET for their desktop apps, so I was doing a lot of learning as well. I remember finally learning how to connect to the database and run some SQL after fighting this old pile of legacy code. In the early versions, I chose to handle create updates for those records in the same function. My young, dumb self wrote a try-catch statement that it would attempt to create a record, and if it failed, it would update the record. That's called an upsert in a lot of programming languages. Just update it. If it's not there, then insert it. Before the first production release, I updated the flow to handle create updates in separate functions, but I never removed the update in the catch block of the original function now used for creates only. Somehow I or any other PM or QA never failed to create or to hit this catch block while testing. We talk about test coverage a lot. That's a missing case in your test, where if you write some code in that line of code is never run in all of your tests, then you don't have very good test coverage. Fast forward to probably 9 to 12 months. Sorry, I'm just trying to add some value to the listeners. So this fast forward to probably 12 months later, I got a ticket to investigate why every case's data looked the same in production. I log into the app, search a few case numbers, and sure enough, every case's data is exactly the same. I begin freaking out as I had no clue how this could have happened. I mean, it could never have happened. All the dev work, testing, and months of lies production use. After I investigated with a senior dev, we realized the try block had failed and the update query in the catch block ran for that record. We also realized that it left off the where clause in the related SQL query to specify which records needed updating. So all the records got updated with this data. Ooh. Thankfully, we kept a regular backups and were able to restore the data to a recent time frame without losing a ton of work. We commented out that database update and called redeploy of the code ASAP. Also, the senior dev was cool and he's like, hey, it happens to us, all of us at some point. Let's just say I've learned a ton since then and definitely steer clear of writing code like that. You live, you learn, I suppose.
You live, laugh, love. You know what? It's so funny. You get like a couple sentences into each of these, and it's like almost like there's like one little bit of foreshadowing that, like,
yeah,
if you've been around the block a little bit, you can be like, oh, I know it's coming. I know what's going to happen.
It's true. There's probably only like, I don't know, 5 or 10 things that go wrong in all of these stories. And it's helpful just to know these things so that you, when you are in a similar situation, hopefully these spooky stories will come eking back at you.
Yeah, seriously. Like, what have we learned here? Have a staging environment that mimics your real production environment for testing. Don't have something that's only production.
Yeah.
What else we learn?
Don't swear. Don't write swears. Don't write silly stuff.
Test your code.
Yeah.
Read things twice. Yeah. Do a dry run of database migrations, a safe run. This episode is also sponsored by Mux. Now, Mux is the perfect place for you to host your video and has some of the most awesome video streaming functionality tools around. Mux basically is a CDN for your videos that gives you on-demand, transformed, transcoded video to suit the needs of any of your audience, depending on where they're listening to it. If they're watching your video in some place, their internet's not good, it's going to serve them up a lower quality version automatically. And it's going to do this all via streaming. Now, take it from me, I've done a lot of video streaming, and it is not an easy problem to solve. You end up having to write all of these transcoders, and you have to write your whole ingest flow and move things around and have a database for all your files. No, thank you. And Mux gets to do all of that for you and so much more. Thumbnails, animated GIF previews, the little thumbnail scrubber thingy, all of that is solved with a simple GET request from Mux. So check it out. Mux Video is the API-first video platform that makes it insanely easy for developers to build beautiful video. So head on over to mux.com and sign up today. Give it a try, especially if you are the type who doesn't want to deal with all of that annoying stuff around video. It's one of those things that we use personally over at Level Up Tutorials. And let me tell you, I absolutely adore this service. So check it out, mux.com. Thank you so much for Mux for sponsoring. All right, next one here is
Sleepy Set All.
Here's my development, Tale of Terror. Ooh, tale of terror. One night, I was burning the midnight oil, trying to get caught up on the never-ending workload. At the time, I was working on an online travel booking site. It was after 11, and the last thing I had to do for the night was to rename one of the hotels in our production database. So I wrote my query, update, hotels, set, name, some hotel chain. Oh boy, I bet you can all see where this is going. One problem, I forgot the where clause. Yo, we should name this title of this episode Werewolf, because it seems like so many people are forgetting the where clause. Jeez.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that. Werewolf.
Werewolf. See, that wasn't even the spooky voice. That was just me trying to do it. Suddenly, over 5,000 hotels in our production database all had the same name. This was around 2003, so well before the point in time restores, and they were only backing up the database every week at that point. I was panicking. Fortunately, I had a dump of the production database that I had created only a few hours earlier sitting on my local hard drive. So thankfully, I was able to restore almost all of the hotel names, save for a couple that signed up for the data dump, and my boss was none the wiser. That's when I learned that working late hours is not worth it, because at some point you get too tired and you no longer make good decisions. That's actually a great lesson, because I learned that all the time. You know, you've had a couple beers or something, you're working on some code, it's almost never productive, or you like end up hitting a bug that you like can't solve, and then you spend hours and you stay up all night trying to solve it, and then you solve it first thing in the morning, because that's just how your brain works. Very good. Yeah, burning the midnight oil, not always a great idea.
We should say, though, like, isn't this a bit of a issue with the SQL
yes.
language that this happens? Like, I know people don't like MongoDB, but if you want to literally update many records in MongoDB, you have to explicitly type that in one of a few different ways. You have to pass yeah. it as a Boolean or use one of the methods that update all. So it's such a common thing.
It seems like a common thing. And it seems like something that I would do if I wrote a SQL.
Yeah. I wonder, there must be like a flag where you have to explicitly have to pass there, because it's got to be that to stop this type of thing from happening. Otherwise, maybe it shouldn't, because then we would not have this hilarious stories.
Yeah. Let's keep it for the stories.
Next one we are going to call I Want Your yeah. Job.
There we go, Wes.
When I first started out working for a consultancy, they trained us in sales meetings to help managers get promoted because we were coming in to make them look good. This was okay because obviously we were coming in as contractor. However, after being laid off due to 9/11, yes, that was about 20 years ago. There's a couple stories here that were, I think this is our fourth story that's like 20, 30 years old. I was looking for a new job, and during the interview, I was asked where I would like to be in X years. I mentioned to the hiring manager that I wanted to eventually do what he was doing. I want your job. Well, I guess he didn't take that as I wanted to make him get promoted and take his spot. So safe to say, I didn't get hired.
Oh, that's so funny. You know what? Preferably what I would do is I would be kicking you out of your chair, sir. That's yeah. what I would do.
The guy probably didn't want a new job.
That's so funny.
That is good. All right. That's all of the long form horror stories that we have for you today. Those were some pretty good ones. Thank you, everybody, for submitting them. If you have a horror story of your own, feel free to shoot me an email, wes@wesboss.com, and we'll put it on the list for next year, because these are hilarious.
We love ourselves some good dev horror stories. And we've all done it. Everybody's been there. Everybody's had that. That person says, you know the face. We all know that face, that, oh boy, what did I just do face? I'm in trouble face, that big trouble. It's very funny. These are both simultaneously wonderful and scary and hilarious all at the same time. So thank you if you've submitted your horror story. And I look forward to seeing the next ones for next year. And happy Halloween for those of you who are celebrating the spooky Halloween.
All right, let's move into some sick picks.
I got sick pick.
I have a sick pick for you today, and I recently upgraded to the new iPhone 13 Pro Max all-wheel drive edition, whatever it's called. And it has the MagSafe charging, and my wife has it as well. So we thought, okay, let's update the car mount. Probably 3 or 4 years ago, I sick picked the magnetic car mount that goes in your CD player, which is awesome. But now we're like, we want that one that's magnet mount and it charges the phone, because then you just have to click it into it and you're up and running. So I asked on Twitter, like, is it any good? Like, is it going to fall off? Like, you see the MagSafe and it comes off like super easy. So I was like, there's no way that's going to go over our neglected streets here in Hamilton. So I found this one called the ESR Halo Lock Magnetic Wireless Car Charger. And the way that it works is, if you have a case that's not MagSafe or whatever, like if you just clip your phone to it, it works great. But if you have a case like most people do.
What if you have a phone that doesn't have MagSafe? Could I put this magnet on the back of my phone?
Yeah, well, it's a little stainless steel halo that goes on the back of your phone.
I can do that, yeah.
And it makes the magnet super, super strong. I went over some huge speed bumps pretty fast and all kinds of stuff and no problem. And I was shaking the thing. It did eventually fall off, but much more than it would. I was so skeptical that it would be good, and it is awesome. Very, very strong. And it charges the phone. I am waiting on a faster or higher voltage like cigarette adapter. So I'll probably pick that in the coming episode once I give it a shot. But I was very impressed with this. So it's called the ESR Halo Lock. You have to buy it's a vent mount one, which is, we're getting a new car tomorrow. So I was like, fine. The vent mount didn't work well in our BMW that we have now, but I'm hoping it does in the new van that we get. And they also have one that like sticks to the windshield as well, but I was pretty happy with it.
Huh. I need to get one of these. Yeah.
It's a good one.
I don't have the MagSafe on my phone, but I have a wireless charging and I don't have any mount in my car right now. Not that I drive that much, but still.
Yeah. Like, honestly, like it's also still a good, like if you don't have it, it's $35 and you could get like a decent just magnet mount for probably less than that. But if you just want to think about like future forward, then that's good. It's not MagSafe. MagSafe charges at like 18 watts or something like that, but it should charge fast enough once I have the proper cigarette adapter thing.
Probably charges as fast as anything else in my car right now.
Yeah, we've got these like gas station 5-volt ones and like they've been fine for us all this time. So getting a proper one. We do have like one little car adapter that is, it detects how fast it can charge. Like it's one of those like smart IQ ones.
Yeah.
But I think it's from Unker or something like that. And it charges the kids' iPads super fast.
Wow.
But that was in the back for the kids, not in the front for us.
My new car, whenever it exists, whenever that may be, it has plugs in it, like AC plugs in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like several of them. I'm like, oh. Yeah, that's going to be the best.
That's awesome. Our van we're getting tomorrow, fingers crossed, has those as well. And I just think sometimes I see pictures of people who have those and they stick the like regular iPhone wall adapter into that. And it drives me crazy because the power coming from your battery and your alternator in your car is DC. And then you're running that through a
converter
or inverter that changes it to AC. And then you run it through your wall wart outlet. That turns it back into DC. That's like the most inefficient way to charge your phone ever.
Yep.
Don't do it.
I have a sick pick today, and it's a portable air compressor, which I didn't think this thing would be any good. I needed a bike pump for Landon. Got a soccer ball. He's got some bike tires that need pumping up. We didn't have a bike pump. And, you know, the bike pumps are you know, they're like $10-$12 anyways. So I found this one that was a electric one. A portable mini air inflator with a tire indicator, and it charges via USB. And I thought that there's no way this thing could be any good because it's this little $34 air compressor, a $34 air compressor that doesn't even plug into the wall. And what was so neat is that you charge it up, you turn it on, I plugged it into the soccer ball, I selected ball, and then it filled it up and it stopped automatically when it was supposed to stop. And I didn't have to even like check to see like what the pressure level was. It just filled it up and then stopped. And I was like, well, this is like super handy for bike tires or anything you got around the house. It says in here that you can use it to fill up all sorts of things, including a car tire. And I'm just thinking like,
oh, yeah,
that'd be wild. Nice to have in your car.
The auto cutoff is key. Because like if you can tell it to go to 35 PSI.
Right. That's going to be awesome.
Then it just cuts off. Like that's, you're saving your tires. Because sometimes people are like, a little over, a little under, whatever. And then you wear your tires unevenly.
And can we talk about those air tire pressure gauges? You push it in, it says one thing. You take it out, you push it in, it says something else. You take it out, you put it, and you're like, I don't even know. I'm just guessing at this point. I'm better off just using my eyes and pretending that I know what it is. Yeah, those things are the worst. So,
man, I need this because I have... At the cottage, we've got a tractor and an ATV and kids' bikes, and all of them are far away from where you actually need to pump it up.
Yeah.
And I always have to drag an extension cord out or bring the thing close enough to the cigarette adapter. But just being able to like walk over, this is awesome. It's pretty cheap.
I was shocked that this thing existed and for as cheap as it did.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it worked very well. First time. I was not expecting. I was like, $34. It's a good bet. I'll give it a try. Whatever. It's got to at least work to fill up a soccer ball. And it definitely did. It was definitely succeeded there. All right. Shameless plugs. I'm going to shamelessly plug the latest course on leveluptutorials.com, which is actually, I'll plug two of them. We have two courses now. One that came out last month from Ryan Alinska, and it's on Prisma, modern GraphQL database with Prisma. And he works with even all sorts of really neat APIs. It's a really substantial series. And Ryan is an excellent, excellent, excellent teacher. And if you're interested in learning a little bit more about GraphQL and Prisma, which is a really neat tech, head on over to leveluptutorials.com/pro, sign up for the year and save 25%. Also, the course that's coming out for this month, October, just about any day now, is going to be on Astro. So if you've never heard of Astro, Astro is a neat new tool that allows you to write in any front-end framework and have ship way less JavaScript. It's very, very cool. So if you're interested in learning Astro or Prisma or Svelte or anything that we teach, leveluptutorials.com. Thank you so much and check it out.
I'll shamelessly plug my Advanced React course at advancedreact.com. And I have just updated it I added a whole bunch of the whole testing module, and the deployment module is coming probably by the time you listen to it. That will be there as well. So check it out if you want to learn React, Stripe, checkout, e-commerce, GraphQL, Apollo, all that good stuff. Advancedreact.com. You can use coupon code Syntax for an extra $10 off. All right, that's it. Thank you for tuning into the spooky episode of Syntax. We will catch you later.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.